Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast, the podcast that is dedicated towards bridging the divide between the police and the communities that they serve. I want to thank you all for taking this ride along with me and with us as we do just that, bridge that divide between the police and the communities that they serve. So on today's episode, I got a good one for you. As you may have listened to, I did a previous episode on whether or not the Black church is failing the community. Now, I am not a religious person, so now I'm just going to leave it like that. However, I do think that the institution of the church has been an important element in the lives of, particularly of African Americans, right? And so in recent years, right, one of the fastest growing, you can't really call it a religion, but philosophies, I would say, is atheism, right? This idea that there are no gods, or certainly the belief that there are no gods. We can get into an argument as to what the exact definition of atheism is, particularly if you look in a dictionary versus what many people would call it, right? I don't want to go down that road. But what I am saying is that a lot of people are turning away from the church, traditional Christian church, African Americans, and you know, religion is down, Christianity is down numerically amongst all ethnicities. But there's a particular element in the Black church that I really wanted to understand and to really investigate. Now, why do I want to talk about these types of things? I want to talk about them because I think that the Black church is important. And I think that it has been the foundation of many of the morals that we have developed. It has been an avenue into our singing. Many music careers have been birthed through the church. It has shaped our philosophy. It was the bedrock of our civil rights struggle, and it has been the bedrock of our community. And now many people are turning their backs on it. And I would even say that the church has really, in a sense, turned its back on the community. When the church embraced this mindset and this notion of prosperity preaching, I think that that really took us down a very bad rabbit hole. And a lot of the results are the dysfunction that we see in the community. And it's not all the church's fault. Let me be very clear in saying that it's not all the church's fault. But I do think that there is some measure of problem when it comes to this type of thing. So I really want to explore this. And part of the exploring that phenomenon of people leaving the church is what they are filling that time, their energy, and or their spiritual needs, and or their need for celebration, for ceremony with. And so I know this brother of mine, his name is Sean Robinson. He is a former sergeant with the Waterbury Police Department. When he was starting his journey back in 2010, 2011 or so, we would talk oftentimes. I was still a member of the church, and we would kind of compare notes and see what was going on and all that kind of stuff. So he left the church, embarked on his journey around about 2011, and he's going to tell us about his journey to African spiritualism and the Ifa religion. So he's going to talk about that. Now, I'm not advocating, let me be very clear what I'm saying right now. I'm not advocating that anyone leave the church. I'm not advocating for any type of spirituality. I'm not advocating for Sergeant Robinson's form of religious or spiritual practice. But I am interested in this phenomenon and what people are doing with their time and how it impacts the community, right? If people's mindset impacts the community, if the church did what it's supposed to do and impacted the community, then I think that we would have much better outcomes. And I'm saying the same thing about this particular form of African religion that Sergeant Robinson is going to explain to us today, and what their philosophy is and what he believes and how that impacts the community. No religion, and I'm going to quote the Bible here from I believe it's from the book of James, although it's been a while since I read it. If anyone does not feed the widows and the orphans, and if anyone does not go see their neighbor when they're sick, then their religion is useless. And I believe in being someone else's brother and keeper. And no matter what part or faith that you are a member of, if it doesn't help your brother man in the end, then it's useless. And we'll get into that a little bit. And we're going to talk about and discuss how his form of African spirituality is impacting his duty to be a better human being and to be a better man. Otherwise, it really doesn't matter whether you're a Muslim or whether you're a Christian or whether you're a Hindu, a Sikh, or whatever you're calling yourself, in my opinion, it must enhance the community. So that's the part where we're going to be coming from. And so that's what we're going to be discussing for today. So just one more thing before we get going, you all know what to do. Make sure you hit that like, subscribe, and share button. Make sure you share this podcast. Make sure that you are supportive of the podcast. It only goes to support the podcast. I do have to pay to put these episodes out. There is a monthly fee for me to put these episodes out. And I would like your help in making sure that these things continue to go on and grow on. So if you enjoy the podcast, if you're getting something out of it, then please consider going over to the Patreon page, Captain Hunter's Podcast on Patreon. $1 an episode, right? I release four or five episodes a month. You know, $5 a month, $1 an episode would really, really help me to support the podcast. Also, you can support the podcast by going over to Cash App, Venmo, or PayPal. All of those are CPT L Hunter, and make sure that you subscribe that way. Make sure you follow me on Instagram and Twitter. Both of those are CPT L Hunter. Actually, before we get into it, we were at a diner. And we picked a diner that we knew at the time of day that we went would be fairly quiet. I swear to you, it was the busiest day I could ever see that any time I've ever been to this diner. So we recorded this episode in a diner. I did the best thing that I could in order to cut out the background noise. But here we go. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here is the interview with the African spiritual leader and retired sergeant from the Waterbury Police Department, Sean Robinson.
All right, so I'm here with my main man, Sean Robinson, former sergeant with the Waterbury Police Department. He and I are both retired, and he is now currently a African spiritual leader. He's going to explain to us a little bit about that, and he's going to talk about his time in law enforcement. So I want to welcome you to the podcast. Welcome, my man, Sean Robinson.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Great to be here. So as Lawrence had mentioned, my name is Sean Robinson. A little bit about me. I've been a Waterbury police officer 20 years. I retired. Prior to that, I worked in law enforcement in the Department of Correction. Since my retirement, I've come into African spirituality. I've been doing that since 2011. What they call a Baba Lawo, which is a high priest in the Yoruba tradition called Ifa. So I'm known as Baba Lawo Ifa Mwagun, or my other sobriquet would be Oba Omoloju Baba Rubo Oba Tola Agbaye. Yes, I know it's a mouthful, but that's just like my chief title in Orisha, which is like a subdivision of Ifa. Ifa, which is the esoteric word of God, it's the Godhead of the overall concept of Orisha. Now, my Orisha, which would be in our terms like the deity or energy that guards your head. The head's important part of the head, the Ori. And it said in Ifa that no spirit can bless you and can't be blessed without the permission of the Ori. The Ori being connected to our higher power, higher self, the God consciousness in our head. So let's just pause there for a second. So before you get into more of that, so we'll talk about your time in law enforcement, and then we'll talk about how you transitioned into that. So you start off in corrections. Corrections.
Yeah. And how'd you like that?
Start off in corrections. I like that. I did that for like almost 8 years. And then I wanted to do something different. And actually, a good friend of mine, Mike Epps, has said to me, "Hey, listen, Waterbury Police is hiring." I never thought about being a cop. You know, I never thought in my mind. He said, "It's okay, I'll take the time." So I took it, you know, not with any expectation. However, things moved quickly. The next thing I know, I had to make a choice. So I had to make that decision to either stay with corrections or go in the police force. At the time, the state was in trouble, so corrections was looking like, you know, like kind of a dismal downturn.
Okay.
So then I went into, so I chose to go with the Waterbury Police, you know, and during that time, it was a better opportunity closer to home. So I transitioned into that. Everything, I liked it. As time went on, we get promoted to sergeant. And during that time, you know, that's when I kind of like ran into or encountered my spiritual awakening, if you will.
Okay.
And in its inception, it was slow. As that moved on, you know, I got deeper and deeper into it. And in 2011, I finally went to Africa and became initiated into the priesthood. The interesting thing about that is, like, you know, people might wonder, like, how does that fit in law enforcement?
Right.
It became a very delicate dance. So I'm trying to balance, like, you know, my, I won't say me strong, but my values, morals, and, you know, behavior according to my spiritual, had balanced that with the secular life of being a police officer, which, you know, can attest to that. Very across the board. So, 2011, that I went to Africa, to Nigeria, to be exact. I initiated into the priesthood. And from that point on, did a lot of training and learning along the way. And once I got to a point where, say, after like 4 or 5 years in, I was able to start actually just doing my own thing. I had a lot of master teachers and mentors along the way who taught me, you know, how to perform the ritual rites and do certain things in order to service the community. So since then, I've amassed like a decent following of people, which will, you know, be equivalent to a congregation, you know, but no physical church per se. I do hold services sometimes at given locations, but a lot of times it's really a one-on-one thing. So it's more like a counseling situation where, like, you know, what happens with E5 is based on divination. So you divine for the people, and with that, certain things come out. This is a blueprint of what's going on in your life. Mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, health, usually a big picture. With that, they would sit down and help people get their lives in alignment, identify problems in their lives and things that they're struggling with. So that, you know, started my ministry in that way. Since then, I've also, like, been invited to speak in certain panels, several panels, like at different colleges, especially with interfaith denomination, interdenominational faith type of deals. So that's another thing that I do. We're also a chaplain, which allows me access to hospitals, prisons, and places to be able to speak to people.
You time law enforcement, the audience can't see us, but obviously you're a black male, as am I. So let's talk about time in law enforcement, as far as you and I had conversations about,
yes,
about how black police officers have to deal, have to live, have to move. So just talk about your experiences. We talked yesterday, matter of fact. I mean, we both agreed that our time in the Waterbury Police Department wasn't terrible. I mean, no department is perfect, but there was certainly no racial animus or whatever on an interdepartmental level where the whole place is a racist place. Certainly, and we had a good time there. So what do you think about what's going on in the country? What do you think about what's going on in our city? Talk about your time as a black officer.
All right. Black officer, one thing that comes to mind first and foremost is that I remember the beginning of my career when young black people said, oh man, there's a black cop. So you're like an anomaly. Oh wow, you know, you're like black Santa Claus. Right. I mean, so, you know, that was one thing. But one thing I didn't realize quickly is that your community is leery of you. Some of your coworkers are leery of you. So right. You're in a funny space, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta get in where you fit in, but like, where do you fit in?
Right.
So it created a situation where identity, you know, like, you know, you want to try to work it out and fitting with everybody, but everybody's not accepting.
Right.
And that's where the dance becomes delicate.
Right.
You know, because like, A, people in the street don't trust you because you're part of the establishment.
Right.
Then you have people on the job that might have certain feelings towards you because, like, you're not, you know, part of the dominant culture. I'm going to share an instance where I was in the locker room at the police department, and someone came up to me and said, you know what, my friend didn't get a job because of you. So what does that mean?
Oh, wow.
So what do you mean by that? Well, they just wanted to hire people. I said, well, what you have to understand is this. A, be that as it may, your friend didn't get a job because you wasn't qualified. I said, because you understand something. For me to be here as a black man, I had to be qualified twice. You know, I had the education. I had to have the background that works for me. But, you know, that was one of the situations a lot of people don't know about. That, you know, I wasn't angry,
but
I definitely respect the fact that they said it to me.
Okay.
I didn't have to hear a third party.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It wasn't one of those things where you could say it takes a lot of ball, yeah. But at the end of the day, you know what? I appreciate that because I knew if that person is thinking that way,
right,
other people are.
Right.
However it goes, how I'm built is like, you know what? That just gave me more of the willpower to stay there. I'm not going to run away.
Right.
Bottom line. So, you know, but that, I found that one of the awakenings that I had there was different things. And then also there was a time when someone brought it to my attention, you know, a coworker who was the Caucasian persuasion, said to me, well, listen, people are questioning whether you're black or blue. Oh, wow. And I said, really? Yeah. I said, well, we look at the way you sit. You know, I said, but the thing is, I get it. Because, you know, and that stemmed from trying to do the job with integrity, treat the people on the street, which is, at that time, for the people that probably aren't aware of Waterbury, you know, there's a big, you know, they were in the verge of the war on drugs, and there's a big, you know, drive to have a community policing come into place. You know, the North End of Waterbury was like, a lot of things going on.
Right.
So, me using my, you know, I guess my black license going there to be able to communicate with people don't like that.
Okay.
They felt like, oh, well, you should be talking to them. And one time I was put on a spot where we were in the precinct on North Main Street. Okay. And there's a club down the street a little bit. So it's like a sea of people outside. There's a sergeant and six officers. And I'm to go out there and tell a certain individual to move his car. Okay. Turn around. Everybody's watching me from the window. Like, well, there's a lot of noise. So I said to myself, okay, I use your head on this one.
Right.
So I had my back to the window and I knew it was loud because there was an air conditioner within the precinct. And then there was a lot of music. Outside, it was loud, so there's no way you can hear me. So my back's in, I'm to people. Get in your car, get the heck up out of here, all right? Look in the window, they're watching you, go. I return to the precinct. Why didn't you arrest him? Move the car. Yeah. But these are some things that we encounter. Like, what to make of that? I don't know. I can't say that it's necessarily a racist thing. And that's one thing I want to take time out to take a little segue on, you know, with the sidebar. But I do believe a lot of these officers that people believe are racist, I don't think it's always that. It might not have people skills, it might be nasty individuals, but it's not always coming from a place where race is the issue. You know, now that's not to say that doesn't exist, but in my experience, when I've seen some things that be deemed or labeled as racist, but also too, we have to just like explore the option that maybe this is just a person with no people skills. Not about that was worse. I watch the people in action with other people over time,
right.
And they don't have.
Right.
So I think as people, sometimes we have to have thicker skin and like look in other areas as opposed to like just everything put the racist label on. Because I don't think that that's necessarily always the case. You know what I mean? Does it exist? Absolutely. It comes from both sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. However, you know, that's one thing I do want to highlight. I found out a lot of people just don't have the capacity to deal with people on an interpersonal level. That's a little bit about mine.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very, very interesting point. A couple of good stories and a very, very interesting point as far as the people skills thing. I think I talked about this in a number of other episodes where people just, they get this power about them, this air about them because they put that uniform on. When that guy asks you whether you're black or blue, that's a really interesting question. And one we have to really kind of delve into as a society, as black people, black officers, white officers as well, because why is there this dichotomy? Why does it have to be either or, right? We're not asking you if you're white or blue,
right?
Why are you asking if I'm black or blue? So inherent in that question is which side are you on? Either you're on the blue side, which I would put the equal sign white,
right?
Or are you on the black side?
Right.
And so I think that and people really have to understand that problem and that way of thinking. So I appreciate that story about that. I can remember just my own story when we took the police test. I took it, not the police test, but the police sergeant exam. I took it. And four black people came out in the top 20, right? And three of us were in the top 10. And I heard rumors, you know, about people saying, you know, what are the Guardians? That was our black organization, the Guardians. Are the Guardians all studying together? I just started thinking about that. First of all, it's only four of us. I think and there was one Puerto Rican person. So that's five minorities out of 15.
Right.
And that seemed to be too many for people. And that was the first time in the history of Waterbury Police Department where black officers had scored so high.
Right.
You know, but I think, as you're saying, we have to be qualified. So, you know, this is what happens when people are given opportunities to equal education, right? Just equal opportunity. We can perform just as well as anyone else,
right.
You know? And so I think that was really uncomfortable for people. People always want to say they're not racist, they're not racist, they're not racist. But then until something happens, that you can really see, you know, things really come out of people. So I appreciate that.
appreciate that. Just to go a little further on another note, when you, something you said, you know, why I have to be white versus black. What I believe is whiteness is invisible.
Right.
That's the standard. That's just the accepted thing. Anything other can this issue with that, with people. And, you know, and that's why I think that a lot of people don't understand about, like, people who, especially people of color in law enforcement. Not only do we get it from the public, we have to deal with it internally. So, you know, you have to be, you know, I think a very strong person, you know who you are, be rooted in who you are to go into this field. Because you know what? We're getting it from all ways. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, people say, oh yeah, well, you're selling out this, that, and other.
Right.
You look at it, it's buying in. Right. You know what? We're buying into benefits and long-term, you know, rewards down the end. So my thing was, what made me consider the job when it was brought up to me, I thought about it while I was writing corrections. That's what I like. But the bottom line, I was looking at the end game. The pension, you know, it's a good standard of living, and the interim while you're working. So that's why, you know, why I went to law enforcement, to Benalti. You want to help people. You want to help yourself.
Right.
You want to help yourself and your family first. So at the time, my kids were, you know, my thing was to educate them, get them through it. The police force to ride the vehicle for me to give them a lifestyle or a standard of life and living that is decent, you know. Now we have some things I want, but you know, the trade off comes where you know you have to deal with just the dynamic of what it is, you know. And I don't think people realize how that, you know, what position that puts us in, because like you're like the bird with no home. Where do you fit in?
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing where I think it's important too. With that is, we have to have like our own steady networks of support outside of the job.
Right.
You know what I mean? That really, you know, makes a big difference at the end of the day.
Yeah. So you talked about this, the how we're perceived amongst the community, right? So now we know that because of these viral videos, recruitment for law enforcement is down amongst all races,
right?
Probably not amongst women. Women still want to become cops because, like you said, it's a good employment opportunity. Right. So they're probably one of the biggest ones. But recruiting's not down. Nobody wants to be a cop because of all these viral videos and stuff. So, especially amongst black people. So, if we don't have enough black officers, we don't want to have black chiefs, black captains, black deputy chiefs, et cetera, et cetera. So talk to us about how we get more black people to become law enforcement, as well as not feel as if they're selling out the community. Because it's not a sellout, right? Helping your community, right? If you were able to talk to these people and not only that story that you gave, but any other person and say, and talk to them in order to get compliance without arresting, without fighting, without all this kind of other stuff, then it's a plus. That they would see your face, like you said, we were a unicorns, anomalies.
Right.
So talk to us about how the importance of black officers, how we get more black officers, and as well as not being seen as sellouts.
Start with the importance of black officers. I think it's important just to be visible, you know, so that people know, especially younger people, anybody who's thinking about it, it's a possibility. But I think the mindset is that, oh, well, no need for me to be black, they ain't gonna hire me because I'm black. So that held back to us. As a people, we have to change our mindset, change our own paradigm. You know, I know historically a lot of things have happened. However, we have to have that, you know, that testament fortitude, stand up like, you know, I can do this. Because as you stated before, we're qualified, you know, we have the intellectual capacity. However, we have to go forward and say, you know what, in order to make a change, you gotta be part of the change, we need to be part of the problem. It's easy to sit there and make excuses and say, well, 101 reasons why I can't do this. And because X, Y, and Z, but I can't say that an invalid reason, but at the same time, is that really the truth? That's what we want ourselves to believe. Because if that was the truth, then you or I never would have gotten on police force, never would have been able to make rank, become, you know, in management supervision. You know, so that's the thing I think is sometimes is like stepping outside of the box. You know, I believe in living outside of the box. Inside the box, you can find. You know, you step out and expand your mind. You see that there's a lot of opportunities out there, but, you know, one thing, about us as a people, we tend to minimize ourselves. When I say that, I mean like, okay, I don't play basketball, baseball, football. I don't play high school. You know, stand up. I believe that that's not true. I just
right.
skate. You know what I mean?
Right,
I should do a lot. My thing is always do things that people don't think that I should be able to do. Right. I have to like them, no doubt. But the bottom line is like, it's about stepping outside of the box, expanding horizons, and moving forward. And it's important because, you know, at the end of the day, I think that will help put an end to a lot of complaining. A lot of us are living in the world. We complain, complain, complain. We're not doing it. You know, and that's why I look at like, take this Black Lives Matter, for instance, right? I think it's a very important concept, a very important movement. However, you have to look at the other side of that equation. We always look at the police, the police, the police. We have to start policing ourselves.
Yes.
We have to have a sense of personal accountability and responsibility within our community.
Right.
You can't normalize deviance by allowing people to stand on the corner and do this, stand on the song, so it's gonna be a problem for me.
Right.
Well, you know what? Everybody's afraid to speak up. Then you know what? This is why we live in marginalized neighborhoods and we're going to be able to live a certain way because, you know, this is what we do, we turn our act. And then the whole thing about no snitching.
Right.
And then, oh, you're snitching, I know. That is a maxim just for criminals. You know what I mean? But Joe Q Public. It's not snitching. You're doing your duty to report. I think that's what, when you look at that mindset, that same mindset, no snitching, the same mindset that perpetuates, like, you know, mistreatment of women, rape, and all this stuff for children, anybody, like, nobody wants to say anything. That's it. You know, and also, you look at the Black families and some of the Hispanic families, historically, there's a lot of taboo conversations that we don't have.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and to me, this all stems from that same little seed, this planet that keeps us in this little dark corner. You know, so I think the bigger part of the problem is us being afraid to step out and attempt to do something different. You know what I mean? Dare to be different. You know, dare to challenge the status quo or what we think is the status quo. You know, because like I said, I think the opportunity is out there, but hey, we gotta go out and prepare ourselves. So a lot of times people claim, oh, this, that, and other, and they want to talk about white man this, white man that. My thing is, at the end of the day, you've done everything that you can do,
right,
to prepare yourself, make yourself marketable, you know, to educators.
Right.
And if it's the answer to no, then you got work to do. It's not on the other people to help you move forward. It's on you to grab yourself by the bootstraps. And then, like, by us being Black officers out there, we said, stand as examples. People can tap into us. I mean, when I was on the street as an officer, I tried to be personable and make myself available to people, talk to them, see what they're thinking, see what's going on. So I never had an issue with dealing with people on the street. Interpersonal communication was never a problem.
Right.
You know, but wow, you talk to us, people are surprised that cops talk. But what happens too is, you know, in that same vein, you have to stop and think, this is where the testament of fortitude and strength as a person comes in. You have to be able to stand up for what you believe in and stand up for what's right. We put that badge on, we're standing up for justice and what's right. You know, but also there's the legal culture, and then there's the institutional culture. You know what I mean? And the problem is, like, you know, every institution has a culture.
Right.
And the bottom line is, if we're there to represent the law, uphold it, we have to do it by any means necessary. But that doesn't come without backlash. It's like anything else. Like, you know, a lot of rewards come with the backlash. But the backlash comes with jealousy from other people. So one thing I identify sometimes, people that they see us, especially some of our own, oh, but you look at the person who's talking to you, they compromise things in their lives for whatever reason, so that's not even an option for them. So what they do is they basically, they're browbeating you because, oh, well, I can't do that, so I gotta feel something. Oh, yeah, well, you know, hey, it's like saying, hey, Captain Hunter has a nice car, but my friend Salsa has a better car, because they have to diminish you some kind of way, and I think that's what happens with us too, like the crab in the barrel syndrome.
Right.
Oh, here we go again, this guy thinks he did. That's what you think.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? But
that's what you
line,
think, I think.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's important because that's part of the whole perception picture.
Right.
You know, like what we perceive. Oh, yeah, you know, like, they're not like us. They don't understand our struggle.
Right.
Most of us came from that same place. But, you know, through, you know, I guess the grace of the powers that be, had good parents, good training, guidance. And that's another thing I do with Alpha. Like, you know what? Some of us don't have that guidance. You know what I mean? So we stood as the examples if people were willing to listen. But also, we're like, kind of like, the antithetical answer to that. We're like, I can't talk to them. That's the police.
Right.
Yeah, they're not working with us. They don't understand what we go through in the home. Guess what? We came from that same place.
Right.
We made different choices, which brings me to my next point where I think, you know, as people, we have to learn to make wise choices, which means being informed. Like we were speaking before. How is being a police officer a bad choice.
Right.
At the end of the day, and then if we never incidents and those that came before us to open the door for us to enter into law enforcement, what would it look like today?
Right.
You know what I mean? When it's still, when you look at it, we're still minority within the police. But we didn't come out. What would it look like?
Right.
You know, and so my thing is that's what people understand. And the example I want to use is like, people talk about the situation with Jay-Z. We talked about that. Right? But you know what? You gotta become, sometimes you gotta become part of the establishment in order to make change in the establishment.
That's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
I think sometimes, you know, everybody doesn't have that vision to see that.
Right.
Like all the boys doing. Right. Seeing the surface, you don't understand. It's like a chess game.
Right.
It's an end game.
Right.
So we're right back here, we're 5 moves ahead.
Right.
You know, we're trying to make this checkmate because we know what our goal is.
Right.
So you know, I think that's another big thing that people really don't. It's a perspective.
Right.
You know, and I think as a people, sometimes we tend to have a very narrow perspective. When I say like as a whole,
right,
and it's colored and shaped by, you know, a lot of the civil rights, you know, infractions and stuff that's happened over time, you
right,
know, the
right
inequalities and stuff. But my thing is like, are we going to lay down and say, well, you know what? Hey, they did jobs out there, so let them go. My thing was this. Honestly, I looked at it. A lot of these young black males coming out to these jobs, right? They came out of college, they became cops. So you say to yourself, job only from soccer players or high school players. Why would they do that? The bigger picture. Get paid weekly, all right? Make good money. Extra duty, overtime, you know, so there's, you know, opportunities to increase, you know, a good pay, make it even better, right? You have, you know, retirement benefits, health benefits, health insurance. How many people don't have good health insurance or don't have any more? You know, so those are things too that, those are things that are really important to me, especially having a family to raise.
Right.
I had to make sure that, you know what, it goes on. So I think sometimes we have to look in a different, we have to change the lenses and have glasses and look. Let's look at this in a different way. It's not about the other people. It's about what have I done for me lately? How can that help me? You know, and by us being present, it inspires other people. Like, you know what? I want to do that too. How do I do that? And so far as law enforcement, I think the reason why we have a hard time recruiting is because of that. And then on the heels of everything else, you know, the totality of the circumstances, here comes Black Lives Matter. And it's a double-edged sword. Yes, it needs to be put out there. It needs attention. However, the other message is like, oh, the police and establishment are no good.
Right.
I don't want to be part of that.
Right, so then
here we go again, where people are running away from it instead of trying to be part of the solution. No, I'm not selling that.
Right.
What are you buying into otherwise?
Right.
What are you doing?
Right.
So that's how it is. Is there another part of that question?
No, I think you pretty much answered it. So let's talk about your transition to African spirituality.
Right.
So I want to have you on because I did another episode that hasn't been released yet. Well, by the time you it'll be released by the time I release this episode. So anyway, I talked to a pastor of a church, and essentially what I'm going to title that episode is something like, "Is the Black Church Failing?"
Right,
failing the community. So I know a lot of people are leaving the Black Church, and going into other alternatives, whether their own spirituality, finding their own way, philosophy, meditation, Buddhism,
right?
And so you chose a different path as far as African spirituality. So tell us about that journey, how you got into it, you know, how you got introduced to it, and also answer this question. I think you also grew up in church, like I did, right?
Yes,
So you came from the church. So we're not going to turn this to church bashing session, but why did you leave the church? Do you agree that the church, Black church, is failing? And I'm saying this, let me just preface this question, because I want the church to actually succeed. Because if the church succeeds, and I'm not religious anymore either, I don't go to church or whatever, but I do believe that art is an important institution. And if that fails, then the family fails, then Black males fail, then our children fail. And so it is our foundation. So I want them to succeed. So tell us about your path, your transition out of church, and how you got into it.
So, you know, as you stated before, growing up, you know, I was through high school, I'm on my parents' roof, you know.
Right. You don't go to church,
you know, boy. I did what, you know, the good person, the good boy does. That's what they want me to do.
Right.
And I did it as a religious formality.
Right.
You know, but throughout that journey, growing up, I always had questions.
Okay.
Why this, why that?
Okay.
I don't want an answer. That's just how it is, boy. You know what I mean? That wasn't good enough for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just felt like there was something missing.
Right.
You know what I mean? I wasn't really, like, I learned a lot of bedrock of my morals and ethics from there. So I could never rock to nothing. I'll never put that down because, like I said, it's not about bashing. You know what I mean? But I just, me knowing myself, knowing that I was always a different person, and I know what I need and want out of life. Something's missing. So I got, older, college and stuff like that. I started exploring different options. One thing about this is like in like, I think 2000, I went to Florida to a wedding. And at the time, I met his aunt. At the time, I worked for the Department of Corrections. She worked for the Department of Corrections, but we were in one part of Florida. We had like a time away, so we took a ride down to South Beach. I'd never been there. So during that time, she's talking. She's going on about spirituality, and she kept saying, Alicia, but it sounded like she's Alicia, Alicia, Alicia. So one time, I find, hey, who's Alicia? She goes, no, it's Alicia. So she started explaining what that was. That's all. So I was interested. You know, there's a part of that really resonated with
me. Okay.
So she went to further explanation, and long story short, we got back to Connecticut.
So she's saying Orisha like people would say Jesus. Oh
yeah.
God, you know,
yeah,
oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, right, right.
So
yeah,
that's okay, yeah, okay,
right.
Okay.
So we come back to Connecticut and she said, well, look, I got some books if you want to read them. So she let me borrow a couple books. I found them really interesting. So then she introduced me to like her spiritual advisor at the time, you know, I mean, like I said, found it really, so that was my segue into religion and awakening, Christianity, so to speak. Because I haven't really been a regular church attender at that point anyway. You know, I would go every now and again, you know, parents have something, on this board, that one, support. But otherwise, you know, I wasn't really into it. You know what I mean? And it's not anything against the institution, it just wasn't for me. It wasn't resonating with me, it wasn't feeding me what I needed at the time.
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
That's what I would say about that.
Mm-hmm.
So 2000. So that's how I got into African spirituality. So as time went on, I went for like divination, different places, and each time I would go to say, "You're destined to do this." And when I saw Baba God working, I said, "Man."
Now explain. Start off with you explained it before.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of
there's a lot of
African words in here.
Yeah, yeah.
So the name of the religion is.
The name of the religion is Ifa.
Ifa.
Or it comes from the Yoruba land, which is West Africa.
Okay.
So sometimes we look it up. We look it up as Ifa Yoruba, Yoruba.
Okay.
And it's West African tradition. You know, it's monotheistic. It's hard for people to wrap their head around that because the main god, if you will, Olodumare, has many emissaries, which I would equate to angels. I mean, it doesn't translate, but this is to give people context. Okay. And they call it Orisha.
Okay.
And
what that lady was saying.
Right.
Orisha. So she's calling a certain angel, if you will,
right,
to give her strength.
Energy, right.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So she kept saying the Orisha this, the Orisha that. So and some of the Orisha have names that are popular. You hear like Oshun.
Okay.
I say brought that into
Eshu,
Obatala, Shango.
Okay.
I mean, we like
sounds like people speaking in tongues.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what it sounds like. So it really comes out. So yes, the Orisha. What's going on with that? Okay. But
no, that's all right. So, so you start off getting into that.
Right.
You had a lot of spiritual advisors telling you about that. So there was obviously a void that you felt that filled as far as what you didn't get from church.
Right.
So do you think that what void are you filling?
Well, the void I think was filled was filled the void of understanding.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of questions that weren't answered by, my Christian upbringing, and I asked them, and what this was like, it really made sense, it felt right, and it resonated. So, everything was like kind of crystal clear to me. Like, this is what this is. This is why, and it just like was a more logical progression.
Okay.
It was like, to most people, it might seem like a lot of smoke and mirrors, like because they don't understand it, but like. That's what the church seemed like to me. I'm like, all right, well, you're saying this, but how does that make sense? So, and then I went on like pretty much this journey seeking, and this is what I found. I looked at Islam, Buddhism, this, that, and other. And to this day, I still read those books. What I'm finding is that, they're all kind of saying the same thing in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I would say is like, whoever the master creator is, I think he sends different messages to different people. And, everybody has an avatar that they resonate with. So my thing is, I don't think that any spiritual path or truth is any better than the next one. It's all about what the person needs. This is what works for me. Now, and that was a big thing so far as filling that void of understanding and the why.
Right.
And that's one thing about also too with the African tradition. Help, like kind of be like felt connected. And the reason why is like I did my ancestry, right? I was really gravitating towards this thing. My ancestry, a lot of it was Nigerian, Cameroon.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, that to me, you know, like, we talk about epigenetics and like, it all kind of makes sense. And gives, like, you know, it gave me a logical reason of why I might gravitate to this, because it's like something that's encoded in my DNA, so to speak. You know, then some people take the position where it's like, well, Christianity is the, I guess you could say, the path of the oppressor, but it's 25,000 sects of Christianity.
Right, you know what I mean?
So that's why I don't get into that argument. But my thing is, it just resonates and works for me.
Right.
You know what I mean? And my thing is, I still don't close the door on some of the Christian values that I learned over time. And like I said, that was the bedrock of making me who I am today. So I mean, this is just like when I graduated and went to the next step. This is where Ifa comes in, because Ifa to me is more the spirituality, where I went from religion to spirituality.
Right.
You know, and that is, there's a big difference when it comes down to it. Because the spirituality is you as an individual and dealing with your spirituality. The other thing is though too, Ifa deals with one of the bedrocks of Ifa is ancestors. You know, what we call Egungun. It's the ancestors, you know. So the bottom line is, you know, those one of our ancestors, you know, the inception of your father's lineage, inception of your mother's lineage, we wouldn't be here. You know, so we're basically the sum total of our ancestry. But being connected with that, you know, I've come to find out that the ancestors, you know, people died, so to speak. Because we're energetic beings, the spiritual beings that come here on earth to have a physical experience to go back to spirit. So what happened with the ancestors, these people have died off as we know it, but energy can't be created. So the bottom line is they change form. So I liken that from to an ice cube, like water. Freeze this ice cube, heat it, it's vapor.
You know what I mean?
But the ultimate composition is still H2O.
Right.
And that's why I think people just change physical form, but we don't cease to exist, so to speak. You know, I've had experiences where the ancestors have, you know, they come through, or they're giving you signs of things that are going on. So that's why, how I see that when it comes to the ancestors. It's a very important piece. That's one that's starting important in this whole thing, because everybody has ancestors. So we pay homage to our ancestors for, you know, giving us the opportunity to be here. But also, with that same concept, we have the concept of they call it Atumwa, which we would know as reincarnation. A lot of times you have people in your family like, boy, walk like a grandpa, you sound like so-and-so. The African tradition will say that, that's the ancestor returning. So you might heard the name like Baba Tunde. It means Father Tunde returns. You know what I mean? So these are things that the truth of this negative. I come from a family that's very spiritual outside of the church too. Like my father's side is from South Carolina, my mother's from Georgia. So my father's side is very, very spiritual. And he introduced me to some people along the way that were like spiritualists and just like, you know, just give me insight on life sometimes. And one of the people, Archbishop Carlisle Clark, you know, that we say Ibaye, he told me he came here to be, we call him Babalu. He said, Babalapa. He came here to do this. He said, you're going to go to Africa. That time, I didn't know anybody in Africa, I had no clue I was going to get there. But, you know, needless to say, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy, gone there, you know, started learning and, you know, started on my path. What's next?
No, I was just thinking about what you said about the messenger and, you know, not putting anyone down. One thing that comedian Eddie Griffin, he said during one of his comedy shows one time that really kind of resonated with me was he said that, you know, forget about who the messenger was, right? I follow Jesus, I follow whoever.
Right.
Did you get the message? And I think a lot of times we don't get the message.
That's why the point I was making, I said, you know, they're giving the same message, they're giving the message, but some people can't separate the message from the message.
Right.
I think that's it. And that just in life,
right,
in general.
Right.
I saw someone the other day, you know, as I do counseling with people, so and so told me this, I didn't want to hear that, except for what they were saying too.
Right.
I said, so my thing is, this is something where you have to go out.
Right.
The information is good. It's valid.
Right.
Verifiable.
Right.
Doesn't matter who's telling you.
It doesn't matter who's telling you.
Get out of your own way.
Right.
Accept it. Then leave the rest. Put it through a filter.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's what, you know, happens a lot of times with people when they get caught up in dogma. That's another thing too. Which kind of helped me or prompted me to like go in that direction, because like there was less dogma. But here's the thing: a lot of people who convert from Christianity to Islam, or sometimes they can coexist. You can still study Islam, still go to church. People do.
Okay.
So one doesn't forget the other one. Islam is not like one says like you can't do this, can't do that.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more forgiving in that sense.
Now, do you think a lot of people are looking for that? I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons that people go to church. So they're looking for that collectivism. They're looking for that sense of unity. They're looking for that safe space, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And you talked about you don't have a church per se or a building, right?
Right.
A congregation or something.
Right.
And you have followers, but not really a congregation, I'm assuming.
Right, right, right.
That meets once a week or whatever. Is that right?
Right.
So talk about I would assume that IFA is more of a personalized type of thing versus the collective church, and not just church, but Islam, where whatever. And talk about the dogma and stuff. So talk about the relationship between the personalized sense of spirituality, which I think a lot of people are looking for,
right,
as also other people are looking for in addition to the collective,
right?
They want a place to go to where they can wear nice hats or have a title or whatever.
So, you know, IFA is about the community as well as the individual. So, you know, community is very important. And I think with any kind of, you know, spiritual order, you know, you need to get together, to commune, to share. Right? But the way IFA is like, we do have like festivals and things where we all come together, but by nature with the divination, and divination is a personal thing, like a one-on-one with the priest. So sometimes I do group divination. However, you know, what happens is some of the stuff that comes up is very, very personal. You know, they say Ifa is true. And I always tell people, don't come sit on the mat if you don't want the truth. It will expose you. You know what I mean? And what happens is, this is the goal about divination. The divination system, some people make it, it's known as geomancy, marking in the sand, you know, different places, but we call it Dafa. The divination system is based on 16 major systems, symbols, which we call Odu. All right, with the Odu is broken down into verses called Eshe. So, with the 16 major ones, which populate to make 256 signs. So, it's 256 signatures. They are encoded with information. So, you have to be able to basically decode these things, and they tell you a story about the person. Health, job, whatever you want to know is there. So, Ifa means the word of God to those people. You know what I mean? So, a lot of people take Ifa as the religion, but it's the word of God. The messianic character or prophet, if you will, is Illumina. Now, Illumina is the Department of Witness of Faith, second only to Olo Damari. He's like the lieutenant to God, if you will. He witnessed the creation of everything. So, when he fought, we can find out anything under the sun, we can actually get the answer because.
Wait. So, somebody with the first. Say that again.
So I'm talking about Illumina. Illumina was the witness to faith.
Okay. You know, that was a person or?
He was a person. He was basically like a prophetic individual, the messianic.
So he kind of found this religion or?
Well, it's really Olo Damari did, but what happened was he became like the voice of wisdom, because there's a story where like, you know, Olo Damari being alive was taking a bath or something. And, he's going to peek and be nosy. And said, okay. If I be nosy, I'm going to make you be a scribe. So you have to write down everything that's going on in creation. So that made him wise, because he was able from the inception to see how everything was created.
Okay.
So we call him the prophet of wisdom.
Okay.
Illumina. And sometimes Illumina is interchanged with Ifa, the name. And so Ifa says, but really what the guy says, but people use it as Illumina saying. So Illumina is the prophet who brought Ifa to the people.
Okay.
You know, so I guess Illumina to Ifa is Jesus to the Christians. Okay. Allah to the Muslim.
Okay.
I mean, so that's
now, how long ago was this? I mean, Jesus was 2,000 years ago. Islam was
older than all religions.
Okay.
So we're talking like 20,000 years ago.
Now, a lot of this was probably word of mouth, oral traditions, right? Has it been written down since?
Since it's been codified since, right? It started off as oral tradition from mouth to ear.
Okay.
And that's why I say that this is not for anybody to say the Bible is the greatest book written. I say that. The Old Ifa is the greatest book that wasn't written.
Okay.
Because if you would compile all of the verses, each verse It's over 256 verses. 256 verses, right? No, not the verses, but no. 256 older. Each one has over 1,000 verses. 15 times the size of the Bible. And then looking at the relative age, what happens is, I would venture to say that Islam, any Hindu, everything, they all kind of go together in a sense, but they've all sipped off of the flower and the Mifa that was so old.
Okay.
You know, when you see a lot of stories, especially talk about ancient Kemet, you know, they talk about, you know, the apostles prayed the third day, rose again from the dead. That was horse and shit.
Right,
so what happens? And it was changed. So you see how things get transformed.
Right.
And you know, a lot of these things that people we're following, like, especially as when I was in the Christian phase, I didn't realize, but like, it was like the new kid on the block in relation to most of the other religions, you know what I mean? I say that to say what? You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you know what? I can see now, comparatively, where some of this stuff came from, where it was borrowed from, and how it worked, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but at the end of the day, I think, you know, this is why I tell people that more things change, the more they stay the same.
Right.
And my message to people is, let's try to see where common strands come together as opposed to differences.
Right.
Because I think that's the thing that polarizes people. I mean, like you said, religion's opiate to people, but people get polarized by a lot of things. Well, you're Christian, you're Muslim, I can't talk to you, you're black, you're white, you're purple. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Do you have to learn or speak Yoruba or Yoruba language? Or?
A lot of the text isn't Yoruba language. You know, the writer's English, so there are certain things that I do. And what I call my version of Yoruba, because it's a tonal language, very different.
Okay.
So you have one word, like the word Ogun, H-O-G-N. Depending on what the tones or the
dice. That's a god, right? Is it Ogun?
Is that? Yeah. But you say Ogun,
right.
It means medicine. Then there's another way it means a fight. So like,
So
what happens is diacritical marks, accent marks, make a difference on how you pronounce the word. That's why it makes it's a very difficult language. That's coming from English to be able to, like, faster, so to speak. I mean, some people do it, you know what I mean? But, you know, at this point in life, I don't know if that's like something I want to do.
Yeah. So, just to kind of finish up here, how does it, tell us about how it helps the community. You talked about it a little bit, but it's a very personalized thing, right? We talk about how the church should be helping the community. Right. Islam, especially the nation of Islam, tries to help the community. How does your version of African spirituality help the community?
I would say, if I was based on the premise Iwa, which means character. So good character, Iwa Pele, good character, Iwa Rere, gentle character. So we don't believe in the concept of the devil. The devil's the darker side of yourself that people look like. So the thing is, like, our own consciousness, we decide, well, I'm going to do the right thing or I'm not. When there's a consequence for doing the right thing, consequence for doing the wrong thing. So the concept of the devil just does not exist. You know what I mean? It's about your character, Iwa. So how it helps the community is, like, you know, a lot of people come, they're looking for guidance. And divination will show them where their character is strong, where it's deficient, what things they need to change, what's going on with their health. Because it's like eight essences that you probably realize is it spiritual, religious, cultural, musical, philosophical, and a couple more. But like, it's a very all-encompassing thing, you know what I mean? I call it like something of them all, because like there's nothing that you really can't get to the bottom of. Because the word Ifa itself means to scrape, to scratch, and to swallow. So I get, the vision I get, or the visual is of having an onion, you peel. If you peel every layer, you're revealing something more. So that's why Ifa is like, you know, it's almost like a farming term. You're just scraping the dirt, pulling back. And you know, you start digging, you start unearthing rocks and buying coins and everything else. So that's the thing that helps you get down to the essence of yourself. Because it's about transformation. And that transformation begins with you as an individual and ends with you. You know what I mean? Yeah. Kind of our brother's keeper, but what they eat will make us brother badger. So you have to be accountable and responsible for your own actions and behavior. You know, and I think that's how it really helps put people into that space where there's self-discovery of knowing who they are. But a lot of people, believe it or not, I don't feel that they know who they are really. I mean, they know their name.
I believe
but
that.
Like, on a really deep level, they don't know who they are,
right?
What they stand for, you know. And that's what I believe it helps people with that understanding. Do that, like, you know, as one, for me, like, being a person who's initiated into the mysteries of Ifa, you get what they call a life Ogun, which is like a signal that tells you about your life. You know what I mean? And you study that. There's so much information, but it tells you things you're going to encounter, how to deal with them, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like what you have a proclivity to do in life or what you're most suited for. So that's the thing that gives you a blueprint of life. But the thing is, that's for you to follow it. And the thing is, it's not going to spell it out. It gives you like this beacon, the starting point. But then through life experience, that's how we kind of get to the point of understanding. Because, you know, we look at Earth as the marketplace. The marketplace where you do shop for experiences. From those experiences, we learn things, you know what I mean? So we learn what to do, what not to do, what works, what doesn't work. And you know, that's that kind of like the rest of the outlook on just the world. You know, so like, this is the marketplace, you know, everyone's up there, we call over, you know, and we're coming out to the marketplace, you know, you gotta have many markets to shop from, but you gotta find, it's like you gotta lose your way, you find your way, so to speak. So like, you, once you pass through the birth canal, all memories of past life and everything disappear. So now you're coming with a fresh slate, and now you're trying to find your way back to the given destiny. So, and you find destiny is what it's all about. You know, everybody has a chosen destiny we chose, but we won't remember it. The big thing with that is, like, you know, sometimes in this life, you get here, like, well, we're impressionable. Oh, everybody wants to be rich. It ain't everybody's destiny to be rich.
Right.
Okay, what they do, work hard, some people just won't be.
Right.
And like, well, so-and-so's doing, I'm going to do what they do. So this is the problem to me was trying to emulate and imitate people.
Right.
Like, for instance, you know, Michael Jordan's a great basketball player. You know, Oprah Winfrey is a great journalist, but we might be great basketball players, but we'll never be Michael Jordan.
Right.
We'll never be open, but we'll still be great in our own right. So what we try to encourages is people to go inside and discover your own gifts and talents and develop those to be the best version of you can be.
Okay.
Not because you're not in competition with anybody. That's what it always teaches. The person you're competing with is yourself. Because what point does it make me compete with you? Yeah, in life, the way things are set up, there's competition. But like, truthfully, I feel like this. When you start worrying about what's going on in your neighbor's yard, some of your house is definitely ready.
Right.
That's how I look at that. So it's about the self-discovery, discovering who you are at the root of that, and then like becoming a better person by practicing good character, and instituting good character. You know, they say character is requisite. They have good character.
And that seems to be so profound, because I think that I think a lot of people struggle with that kind of stuff, that whole self-discovery, whole good character type of thing. And I think a lot of people, particularly in the religion that I grew up in, you know, grew up in the church, is that they're so scared. You know, like you said, there's no devil in your religion, right? So there's no one to blame. It's just you. And I assume there's no heaven and no hell in your religion.
No hell. But this is earth and then there's heaven. So I mean,
so there's no fear factor for people. So some people are just going to be good or give charitable donations or do whatever because it happens, this fear of hell. Or and if they do mess up somehow, they just blame the devil. So I think that's crazy.
Yeah, so we thought today talk about, like, you know, they said out of like 1,900 people, it might be 20 good ones. So they're just saying basically, when it comes to good ones, it's character. Good character is something that's a rarity amongst people. And you think about the people we know and things we've seen in life, like, wow, you know, it really makes you think. Make you wonder about that, you know what I mean? You know, I wouldn't say stick it to those numbers per se, but you know, those are old numbers. But the bottom line is, you know, just the overall belief. But you know, another thing too, when you talk about people looking at themselves, you know, people talk about Oshun. It's a big thing. Oshun, who represents the river, water was the first mirror.
Right.
And the big thing is, like, you know, the mirror is not only for reflection, but it's for correction. A lot of people look in there, fix their mustache, their beard, whatever, but they're not looking there to look at the character and say, hey, you know what? I need to change this for myself.
Right.
So one thing I've heard people do, don't have to talk with themselves in there.
Right.
You know, keep it real. You know what I mean? See yourself, be true, be honest with yourself. You know, and, that's the only way to kind of like come to that realization.
Yeah. Cool. So do you have any kind of contact information to get people that want to get in contact with you?
You get in touch with me on IG, Instagram.
You have to spell that for the people, man.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? That's better. Yeah, it's like I'll give them there's a contact number, which would be easy for all of the stuff that will come out of my mouth is definitely going to be difficult to, what you call it.
I can edit all this out, so
if it takes a minute to find this.
Or even if you want to go back to the IG stuff and spell it out. That'd be fine.
Yeah, I'll do that. So I'm trying to find this phone number they can reach me at. And this is my Google voice call. I mean, it's 754-225-5296. And it comes out, it's like, call our 754-225-5296 to reach me at that number. So Instagram would be Baba, B-A-B-A, yeah, underscore, I-F-A, M as in Mary, U, W, A-G-U-N. That's my Instagram. So Baba underscore Ifa Nuwagun, which is I-F-A, M as in Mary, U as in uniform, W as in whiskey, A as in apple, G as in gun, U as in uniform, N as in Nancy. That's my IG. Those are the best ways to get in touch with me.
Okay, cool. All right, so I want to thank you for being on Captain Hunter's podcast, man. Keep up the good work, man. We both enjoyed our time in law enforcement.
No doubt.
Now we move on to bigger and better things, man. Congratulations. I didn't know you was doing all that with the chapels and stuff, man. It's good, man. It's what's up. It's good, man. So thanks for coming in, and see you again, bro.
All right.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, man.
I want to thank my special guest, African spiritual leader and retired Sergeant Sean Robinson, for being on Captain Hunter's podcast. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the conversation. Not trying to bash any religion, not trying to tear down any religion or spiritual thought, nor trying to encourage anyone. Really thought it would be an interesting conversation, and I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. And like I said at the intro, any religious frame of thinking that does not help your fellow man, to me, is useless. So once again, I want to thank my special guest. If you want to reach out to Sergeant Robinson, he can be reached at 754-225-5296. And he can also be reached on Instagram at B-A-B-A underscore I-F-A M as in Michael, U W A G as in gun, U-N as in Nancy. So that's Baba underscore. I'm not even going to try to say the African name. If I-F-A-M-U-W-G-U-N. So check him out if you have any type of curiosity about what he's got going on. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to Captain Hunter's podcast. Please support the podcast. Cash App, Venmo, PayPal. My Facebook page, Captain Hunter's Podcast, Instagram, CPTL Hunter, Twitter, CPTL Hunter. And that's it. Much love and peace. Until next time.